Everything's great, Steve. Thanks.
How heartbreaking was it to see Saquon yesterday?
Very difficult. I was watching on TV, like most people, really hard to watch. And I hate it. I hate the injury. My colleague Ian Rappaport has the full diagnosis. He tore not only his ACL, but a partial tear of his meniscus. And a strained MCL. The MCL is not the issue. That'll just heal. The meniscus is going to require another surgery in 2 to 4 weeks after swelling and inflammation has gone down. So by no means is this insurmountable, but it's not usually just an an ACL, and unfortunately Saquon's wasn't just an ACL.
Right. I mean, you can get to the point where you can tear the PCL, the MCL, the ACL, yep. and so forth. He didn't tear the PCL. He strained the MCL, which is a partial, mm-hmm. and that just heals with time. But the meniscus part does add to it.
Yes, it does. I don't think it'll add to any kind of recovery, Steve, but I think it will add to the rehab and the amount of work he's going to have to do. Although with Saquon, none of us who know him worry about that part. He'll work his tail off.
Yeah. I mean, in other words, he'll get himself back. I mean, because you and I know his work ethic is unparalleled. I mean, he'll treat this as if he's actually going to the season.
Yeah, I just feel so bad for him because last year, after the high ankle sprain, which he willed himself to come back from, missed 3 games, probably should have missed 6. You know, he played a little bit compromised, but he really wanted to be out there, and that's Saquon. So you hate the idea that this year, again, he has an injury where nothing he could do about it. Joe Judge, the Giants coach, was just on Zoom with us, and he reiterated what at least I know, and I have to believe most reporters know, you know, Saquon couldn't have trained differently to prevent this. He couldn't have worked harder to prevent this. This isn't one of those soft tissue injuries that we can talk about, oh, what if they had had preseason games? Maybe some of this wouldn't have happened. This is it happens, it stinks that it happens, and there's nothing he could have done to prevent it. And by the way, Eddie Jackson of the Bears, who's a terrific player, in his own right, sent out a tweet saying he never intends for a player to get injured, and he mentioned Saquon in the tweet. I didn't think there was anything wrong with the defender on that play. I had no issue there either, so this was just bad football luck for Saquon Barkley, I think.
No, the play was clean. What actually made the play happen is because both guys made such great effort. Saquon wouldn't go down, and he wanted to take him down. It was just effort on both parts that actually created the injury, which is good football, actually.
Yeah, and sometimes you see a DB, you know, try to push Saquon, you know, or you know, just kind of almost stay out of his way, but get him to the boundary or get him to the ground. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. Good football play all around. The result's what stinks.
Part of the issue he's had, now look, when you're the second overall choice in the draft, there's a reason why they're the second overall choice in the draft, all right? And how tough has it been for him to operate behind an offensive line that has needed such dramatic rebuilding?
Yeah, I mean, not easy. I'm not sure, and this goes back to past, not current, past conversations I've had with James Franklin. I'm not sure Saquon's ever had a great or even a really good offensive line. And, you know, at Penn State, it was because of the sanctions and because of certain positions hit harder than others, which my impression is offensive line was in that group. So, you know, and with the Giants, he certainly hasn't had a good/great offensive line at any point. So, and I don't know what this year's is going to turn out to be. So, you do wonder, a wondrous talent who needs some help in order to fulfill his great potential. No one does it alone at the NFL level, not even quarterbacks who have the ball in their hand more than anyone else. So, you know, my hope for Saquon, first and foremost, now is a complete and full recovery, which I certainly expect, and then the idea that this is a team structured in a way that it's more ready to win than any professional team he's ever been a part of when he ultimately comes back, and I have to believe that is for the 2021 season. I have to believe he's back for that.
Right. I'm with you all the way on that. Let's get to what happened with the Niners. The last time, I did a game at MetLife was 2013. So, you know, So they've replaced that turf since. So what is the Niners' issue with the turf?
Well,
because they've got to go back there again after spending a week at the Greenbrier.
I think their issue is they just lost, you know, one of the 10 best defensive players in the league in Nick Bosa. You know, I think that's probably their issue with the turf. I don't know that an ankle sprain by a quarterback is something you would blame on the turf. I guess there's a scenario where you could. And they, I know they also lost Solomon Thomas. So I know yesterday was not a good day for injuries around the entire league. And I was at the Jets 49ers game, so I did see that up close and personal. Losing Bosa, that made me sick too, by the way. I mean, I like to see players, A, stay healthy, and I like to see great players play. And Nick Bosa certainly fits that category. So that was disappointing. Their issue, they said something about the turf, which was replaced before this season. So there have been two games on it. I think I'd have to rack my brain to come up with an issue in the Steelers-Giants game. I can't think of an issue in that Monday Night Football game, injury-wise, that struck me as unusual or anything like that. I can't think of one. There were two injuries to Steelers offensive linemen, but I don't think they would have been the kind of injuries that you would blame on turf. So, I don't know. And then there was a statement today by the MetLife Stadium folks that the turf's been inspected and passes all of the tests. So, you know, could it just be bad luck? It's 2020. I think it could just be bad luck, but what do I know?
No, I agree with that. It could just be. Because, I mean, look, you not only saw it live, but then you watched the replays. And what were your thoughts, A, watching those injuries happen live, right? And then when you looked at the replay and the reasons for it.
Right, right. And offensive linemen are tangled up all the time anyway.
Yeah.
Not that that makes their injuries any less devastating to teams. But, you know, that we've learned to expect.
All right. No, that's exactly right. So what are your impressions through 2 weeks? Because what's interesting about this is that in some ways you feel like you're watching a college football season because there were no scrimmages against other teams. Mm-hmm. There were no preseason games.
Right.
In college, you just start and you go. So every coach, and you've heard this 1,000 times, I don't have to tell you, a college coach will tell you to make your greatest improvement between game one and game two. Why? Because now you've got game one under your belt. You know what went wrong. So who's better after game two, in your opinion?
I think the Bills are at the top of that list. I am mystified, and I'm going to try to get to the bottom of it, how Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs have great chemistry. Right off the bat, I saw it in training camp, and I could not believe what my eyes were seeing. And because it was training camp, I trusted it, but I wasn't sure how much I should trust it. They are absolutely remarkable. I don't know how they're doing what they're doing, and I think it's a great credit to both of them. Diggs is helping Josh Allen become a better quarterback and a more accurate quarterback. And to Josh's credit, he trusts Diggs, where no movement is a wasted movement for him when he runs a route. I've talked to him about this. He is unbelievable that way. And I'm not sure that we all knew that, you know, during his time in Minnesota. So I think the Bills are absolutely remarkable. I would like very much for them to get Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano back because they're really good linebackers and they're going to need them. But what the Bills' offense is doing right now strikes me. Obviously, Lamar Jackson. I mean, I just, you know, you're talking about a guy who's just so good, so composed, and everything else, and just fun to watch. Mahomes speaks for himself, too, by the way. I think that those would be a few of my top storylines of the teams I've seen, although I will say I don't think we talk enough about the Steelers' front, because I don't care if you're Saquon Barkley or if you're a, you know, 270-pound fullback. I don't know who's chipping Bud Dupree. T.J. Watt's obviously, you know, very talented. Hayward's in the middle. Some of us remember Ironhead, his dad. So, yeah. You know, the teams that I've seen so far, there are a few of them that stand out, you know, especially specific parts of those teams.
Something I've talked about for years when it comes to athletes in general, and Mike Gesicki of the Dolphins falls into this category.
Oh, he had a good game yesterday, a really good game, yes.
Yeah, really good game.
Yep.
But Mike's a guy who played a lot of different sports in high school. He played volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up playing basketball. He's a Troy All-State basketball player, player of the year in New Jersey. Kyler Murray, in the opening game against the Niners, rushed for over 100 yards. He was tackled exactly once because he got out of bounds or he was able to slide. Now let's bring it full circle with Mike Gesicki. what do Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson both have in common? They're both outstanding baseball players at one point, which means they know how to slide. How important is that moving forward when you look at an athlete that they've played other sports and they can bring that kind of element to the table, because it's going to keep Russell Wilson going? You know, people forget he was a fourth-round pick of the Colorado Rockies, and he played in the Rocky system briefly. And then there's Kyler Murray.
Well, and Mahomes' dad, you know, played for the Yankees and
for everybody,
and
twins.
For everybody else, and Patrick grew up, you know, in clubhouses essentially. I mean, to me, it's more arm angle. I get the slide thing, I do, and they can protect themselves. And I, you know, if I've not really seen a lot of Kyler yet, but I certainly could have put him on the list of wows, you know, 2 weeks into the season. You know, to me, it's more arm angle, Steve, but I get what you're saying with the sliding. And the one thing about Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson, they both went to teams that invested fully in who they are. They built immediately around their quarterbacks, even at a very young age. And that was so, so smart. I did not necessarily think Cliff Kingsbury would make it. I don't even know what his record was at Texas Tech. I don't know that it was a winning record.
It was not.
So I was skeptical. But for those organizations, they decided to go all in. They are two of the more watchable teams, obviously, because they're really entertaining. But they really did it the right way in terms of building around their quarterback. I have great respect for teams that have that kind of self-awareness and that kind of dedication to say, we're all in with this guy. You know, we see a lot of square peg, round hole people. We see a lot of quarterbacks struggling. You know, listen, you know, even Saquon at number two for the Giants, you could argue it took them way too long to fix the offensive line to help out their number two pick in that draft in Saquon Barkley.
Right.
So I just love what they're doing. And the Kyler experiment to me is absolutely fascinating, because all we heard was he was too short.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, let's go. Now, I asked you about through 2 weeks who's impressed. Now, through 2 weeks, who should have the alarm up?
Well, I mean, the Jets aren't functioning right now in many ways as a professional football team. They look lost, not particularly competitive. That's not a good sign. I don't think the Giants look that way. I do think the Giants have not been able to capitalize on a few opportunities where, at the very least, right now they conceivably could be 1-1. Daniel has continued to give away the ball. He has 4 turnovers in 2 games. That's just not sustainable. And my sense is, I certainly believe Joe Judge knows that, and I certainly believe behind closed doors there is an urgency to fix that. But both of the New York teams who play in New Jersey right now are not distinguishing themselves in different ways. And now it will be tough sledding, I would guess, for the Giants, who, in losing Saquon, they lose a player who was the singular focus of every defense they faced. So that challenge will now be – they will now be able to direct their sort of personnel other ways, because they don't have Saquon anymore to worry about if you're a Giants opponent. So, you know, the Giants and Jets stand out to me because of the teams that I cover most often. And frankly, the Jets can't get out of their own way, and the Giants have already fallen on some hard times.
I'll say this. The Giants look like they have more fight in them. They may not win games,
but
they look like they have some
fight in them.
Sometimes I wonder about that, Steve,
because you know how that can look, you know, at certain points. But, yeah, I'm with you on that. And, by the way, the Eagles aren't distinguishing themselves either early on.
No. They're absolutely struggling. Absolutely struggling. Well, you never struggle, so it's great to have you with us. Appreciate you very much. Continue to do the great work, and all the great respect we have for you all the time, Kim. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve, so much.